someone would know.
In the meantime, I would like to check if we all have the copy of the agenda. And if not, could you please indicate by show of hand so that we can provide you with one. Do we all have? Looks like we all have the copy of the agenda. Okay, shall we then start? We are on item number one, which is opening and welcome. I'd like us to observe a moment of silence for prayer or meditation. Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to Financial and Fiscal Commission. Thank you very much for coming. Good morning to the South African Local Government Association. Good morning to National Treasury. Thank you very much for coming. And good morning to the hardworking staff, all stakeholders, and all guests. You are welcome. Well, today we are meeting here to receive a briefing from FFC and SALGA on the 2018 Division of Revenue Bill. As honorable members would know, the allocation of resources to the three spheres of government is a critical step in the budget process, required before national government, the nine provinces and 257 municipalities can receive their own specific allocations. This is all part of South Africa's open and accountable budget process. So we're looking forward to getting those presentations, and honorable members, if you can listen critically and engage on clarity-seeking questions, because remember, they are here to empower us, to enrich our knowledge base, so that when we interrogate on our own, we interrogate the Division of Revenue Bill and compile a report and making recommendations. It should be quality work coming from this engagement, so that it should not appear like they've wasted, there was a wasteful expenditure of them coming here, but we end up not using that information. But thank you so much. Indeed, let's engage. I'm looking forward to a meaningful and a constructive engagement. Meaningful and constructive engagement. Thank you very much. So we will then move on to on item number two, apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and guests. Ms. Sopisitole indicated that she will be running late, but she will be joining the meeting. There are any other apologies. Thank you.
Honourable members, we only have one apology. Do we accept the apology? Apology accepted. Thank you very much. Shall we then zoom straight into the presentation by the Financial and Fiscal Commission? I'll hand over to the Chairperson, Dr. Plucky.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson.
Professor, which one? Prof.
My surname is Dr. Plucky.
Okay, Professor Plucky. Prof. Over to you. Thank you,
Chairperson. And honorable members and the guests in this forum. Chairperson, I'd like to introduce the team that's with us. With me this morning, Scott Henry, XTN, who's the our parliamentary liaison officer, Professor Dr. Mabubu, who is our research director, Safa Peters, who is one of our researchers. Dr. Uwe is one of our researchers. And Ahmad Khalid Dawood, who is the other researcher, and our commission secretary is Ansuya Dawra. Maharaj Dawra. I don't know whether sometimes I have this double barrel surname. But that's it. Chairperson, I would like to say to you that firstly that we're doing this live presentation, but we also have a narrative report which you'll get from us within an hour after we've done the presentation. This is some cosmetic change that needs to be done to so it's much more tighter. This presentation is a continuation of our interaction with yourselves as the Standing Committee on Appropriation, last week's interaction with the Finance Portfolio Committee and also the Select Committee. So please see this as a continuation because we're not going to go back into some of the macroeconomic and financial issues that deal specifically with the division of revenue matters as you've raised with us in the letter. Just to remind that the 2018 budget was tabled under a climate of difficult economic and fiscal conditions. The low growth environment will continue to place downside risk on the fiscal framework. The Commission welcomes the manner in which the budget responded to the risk, especially the credibility of the budget remains intact. In particular, the instruments that undergird the credibility of the budget is extremely useful and continuously shows the nature of transparency and openness around our budget process as a government and as a country. Our core expenditures have been protected. In particular, we have the view, as mentioned the last time to your honourable selves, that we were concerned during our processes that social spending, and in particular the wage bill, should not be adversely affected. And we're happy that the spending level fixing powers of the expenditures to protect those core expenditures has been put into place. Also, part of it is that the deficit is expected to decline in the medium term. So we're making this submission to you in terms of Section 2141 of the Constitution and Section 35 of the Intergovernment Fiscal Relations Act. Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to Eddie Rakabe, who's our fiscal policy person, to take you further into our submission. And then I'll come back to you upon the closure.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I'm going to take you through the rest of the presentation. The first part deals with the technical changes that the Commission note on the Division of Revenue Bill. Well, Chairperson, in 2018, the Commission recommended that National Treasury should improve access to credit market for large cities by allowing them to use the infrastructure grant fund allocation to leverage private capital. And what we note in this current year Division of Revenue Bill through Clause 8, we see that National Treasury has revised that clause to make sure that the municipalities can borrow against the conditional grant. So the processes for borrowing has now been improved. And the Commission welcomes that change. The only caution that is made here is again that there should be consistent monitoring of this borrowing so that it doesn't affect the contingent. It doesn't increase our contingent liabilities, especially in respect of the fact that the national debt levels are already high. So you also don't want to see the debt levels at the municipality level going up. Next slide. Chairperson, there's also changes made to clause 30, which specify that the indicative allocation to municipality for every allocation to be made by the provinces should actually indicate the allocation which comes from the provinces and the allocation which comes from the conditional allocation to the provinces. There's also a state point two which is added, and it states that the provincial treasurers must ensure that allocations from provinces to municipalities are consistent with the terms of any service level agreement concluded between the province and the municipality, and the commission will come to this.
Say, if I may interrupt you, could you please speak louder?
Okay.
Not very fast. Remember, we want to.
Oh, okay.
You know?
All right. Good.
Not very fast, but you can speak louder.
Yeah. Okay.
Allow us, you know, to catch up.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, the Commission welcomes these changes which are made in Clause 30, especially on requirements for service level agreement between the municipalities and provinces in respect of the conditional grant allocation. We think that would be a prefix that would provide serious improvement to how provinces and municipalities deal with each other, and also in terms of monitoring the outcomes for the delivered outcomes associated with conditional grants. Next slide. There's also changes made to Clause 27, which is revised to add the provincial emergency housing grant as well as the municipal emergency housing grant. And these grants are intended to provide funding for provinces and municipalities for the provision of temporary shelter assistance to households affected by the disasters. The Commission also welcome this new development as will assist the Department of Human Settlement in dealing with the unexpected housing requirements. There's a submission which was made by the Commission, I think, in 2012, which was dealing mainly with disasters. So the Commission is of the view that there should be a more comprehensive approach to dealing with some of these disasters, as is currently the case with the water crisis that we are dealing with. So there's also need going forward to also address some of these disasters which we are seeing. Clause 27 is revised to require provincial departments of health and education to annually review the document that outlines their infrastructure delivery management system. And the Commission also welcomes these changes. It is of the view that annual review of the IDMS document will allow provinces to improve their planning and budgeting processes. So the Commission previously have made recommendations with respect to poor planning processing at the provincial level because it affects expenditure on conditional grants. So we are the Commission is of the view that these changes will certainly improve planning in the planning processes for conditional grants and also make sure that the allocated funds are spent effectively. Next one. Use of plots also has to allow municipalities to apply and to qualify for integrated urban development grant as envisaged in 2019-20 financial year. So the urban development, the integrated urban development grant will be a combination of different local government and conditional grants, and this is a welcome development from the Commission's perspective because it is in line with some of our past recommendations regarding the consolidation of local government conditional grants. So the Commission broadly supports the initiative to support also non-metropolitan municipalities if they also face urban development challenges. So the submission which was made by the Commission in the previous, the 2017-18 financial year, actually focused on urban development. And what we have noted was that it is not only metropolitan municipalities which are struggling with urban development challenges, but also your secondary cities. So this is a welcome development which will enable some of your secondary municipalities to access the integrated urban development grant. So, okay. Just a note is that the National Treasury should specify explicitly in the clause the types of municipalities that may apply for the grant as it is not targeting all non-metropolitan municipalities. Next slide. Chairperson, the next set of slides looks at the fiscal framework that is underpinning the 2018 budget. And the message coming out of this set of slides really it's just cuts, and so the commission just knows it will be just know some of those cuts in the budget. So the division of revenue among the three spheres is characterized by muted growth. By muted growth over the 2018 MTEF. Well, the Commission welcomes the real growth in equitable share allocation to municipalities over the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework, as the local government is expected to grow by 7.5% in nominal terms. The conditional grant allocation to the provinces and municipalities will bear the brunt of the need to cut and reprioritize spending in order to stabilize the government. So that is basically the message that the, which is coming out of this next set of slides. Well, looking at the provincial fiscal framework, what we note is that the provincial fiscal framework has declined by 18 billion rand over the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework as a result of consolidation. But despite this reduction, both the provincial equitable share and the conditional grant are still expected to grow on average at above rate of inflation over, and this is in nominal terms, of course. So with the implication thereof is that provinces may still be able to maintain deliver of constitutionally mandated basic services. However, as I mentioned, is that infrastructure grants have taken the brunt of this cut with about 13.7 billion deductions over the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework. So if the inefficiencies in spending for some of these conditional grants do not improve, we are likely to see the delays in addressing some of the health and education infrastructure backlogs. The table just shows the average growth rate over the medium-term expenditure framework. If you look at the provincial equitable share formula, I mean the provincial equitable share, it will be growing at an average real average growth of 1.69%, and the conditional grants only grows at a real average growth of 0.49%. But at least what is encouraging is that at least the budget has been able to protect the allocation by more than inflation increases. Next allocation. Well, in terms of the provincial equitable share formula, the government has announced in 2018 budget that the provincial equitable share formula is under review. There is a pressure which is coming from the province, from provinces for only need to review the review the provincial equitable share formula to make sure that it is fair to all the provinces. So the initial phase will consist of improving the data quality that is being used, and the second phase of the review will also align health and education components. The Commission is deeply involved in the process with the National Treasury in reviewing the formula. So what we just want to note is that the when the review happens, it also needs to take into account expenditure and revenue assignment functions of both the national and provincial government. So these are some of the issues that will be considered when the equitable share formula is being reviewed in the next couple of years. Next slide. Then this slide just shows the provincial conditional grant, the cuts which have been made with the provincial conditional grant. So over the 2018 medium-term expenditure framework, we see quite significant cuts made to the provincial conditional grants, and most of these reductions are in respect of the human settlement development grant, as well as in the education and health sector. As you can see, the human settlement development grant, I think, has received the highest cut relative to other conditional grants, and the next grant which has been cut the most is the education infrastructure grant. Of course, this has got implications going forward for delivery in respect of dealing with the education infrastructure backlogs, especially in the Eastern Cape, as well as the housing issues in some of the mining towns. But the provision has been made through the emergency housing grant, which would then be able to address some of the challenges which may come as a result of the cut. Next slide. Now, the slide just shows the extent of the cuts which have been made to this to the conditional provincial conditional grant. So, the Human Settlement Development Grant is reduced by 7.2 billion over the medium-term expenditure framework. But again, what we note is that the spending performance on this grant has been over 96% over the past 5 years. So when you look at the extent of the cut on the Human Settlement Development Grant and the expenditure performance, there's almost some kind of misalignment there, as the cut needs to focus on grants which are not performing. The Health Facilities Revitalization Grant and the indirect component of the National Health Grant are reduced by 511 million and 309 million respectively. And what we know is that while these reductions are not significant, the Commission is of the view that they are likely to negatively affect the provision and maintenance of key health infrastructure, which is vital for the piloting and rolling out of the National Health Insurance Reform. With respect to the education infrastructure grant, the reduction amounts to 3.6 billion over the medium-term expenditure framework, while the HIV AIDS and AIDS grant has been reduced by 51 million. The Commission holds the view that cutting the baseline of the EIG, which is key to the provision of school infrastructure, will also negatively affect the condition of infrastructure and learning process, as well as the learning outcome. Next slide. Going to the local government grants, what we know today is that the local government is set to receive a total of 383 billion worth of transfers over the 2018 medium term expenditure framework, and this is comparison to 364 billion that the sector was envisaged to receive in the 2017-18 medium. So local government in the main has been cushioned from this consolidation, as we see that the amount of allocation which was projected in the 2017 budget is actually much more lower than what the 2018 budget allocates. The conditional grants across all the sectors face major cuts, as I've already mentioned. The Commission notes that these reductions are unfortunate but understandable in the context of the current fiscal constrained environment. The local government sphere is relatively less affected by the cuts than the other two spheres. The Commission also notes that the local government equitable share and the general levy are also separated from the cuts, affecting many other transfers. Next slide. Now, if you look at the baseline reduction to local government conditional grants, so what we note here is that over the medium-term expenditure framework, municipalities are set to receive 136 billion through direct conditional grants and 28 billion through indirect conditional grants. So what the Commission notes here is that we're starting to see a movement away from the indirect conditional grants to direct conditional grants, and this is in line with the recommendations that we have made in the previous submissions. The local government conditional grant baseline will be reduced by a total of 13.9 billion over the medium-term expenditure framework, and where we see the largest cut is in respect of the municipal infrastructure grants, the public transport network grant, the electricity network, the Integrated National Electricity Program, as well as the Urban Settlement Development Grant. Again, what we know, the trend that it's similar with the provincial conditional grants, where we see that the cuts are mainly targeted at your infrastructure allocation, and that may have implications for local growth and also future growth. That's fine.
So what we know with respect to all this cut for local government and the provinces is that the reduction in constitutional grants seem not to follow any clear cut pattern. Some of the more widely accepted criteria, such as historical performance of the grant. Although these cuts were not necessarily inevitable, but what we know is that the cuts seem to have focused on the bigger grants in terms of the allocation, and not necessarily the grants which do not have a very good spending performance. And the reduction also falls disproportionately on infrastructure grants, contrary to the National Development Trust of infrastructure-led growth. The Commission would propose that in the future a more rigorous analysis of the performance of each grant is done before these cuts are done. It is also important that in the near future a rigorous analysis is undertaken to ascertain the impact of such reduction on households, business, and the economy at large, and to draw lessons for future consolidation exercise. Chairperson, if you allow me, I would like to hand over the chairperson to the Commission chair to just conclude with, to see the final conclusion.
Thank you, Chair. So, based on the muted economic growth that we find ourselves in as a country, the Commission is in agreement with the general thrust of the 2018 Division of Revenue Bill. The Commission commends efforts by government to protect social spending, as I've mentioned earlier, and the local equitable share in particular. The Commission also proposed conditional grant cuts on conditions that going forward, government addresses identified weaknesses in the criteria used to cut the grants, and B, puts in place monitoring and evaluation plans of the cuts after a certain period to see and assess how it's impacting currently and future service delivery, rather. Sorry. I think there's a need to in particular look at how does the impact going to affect going forward, in particular service delivery, but also the infrastructure. But also, while conditional grants might have been cut, I'm of the view that it probably also helped with spending management. And one will then be able to see exactly where the efficiency gains for government and also in which particular grant needs to be provided. Commission supports the proposed new conditional grants, subject to the matters raised in our submission. We have the view that government has responded adequately to the Commission's recommendations and indicate actions underway at implementing the recommendations. We will, however, come back to this committee because we partly report to this committee and to other portfolio committees to bring to your notice that over the last years, but in particular the last 3 years, we have made recommendations to a number of ministries, because we don't advise the National Treasury, we advise Parliament and National Government of what needs to be considered in the Division of Revenue and the appropriation. And we are genuinely of concern that a number of departments has not responded to the submissions that we've made. And Treasury has responded to those ones that has a direct impact on the appropriation and the budget. And Treasury has correctly indicated to us, Chairperson, that the other responses must come from the line departments, and there's a number of them. The number of big departments has not responded, and that put us on the back footing, because it basically means whatever recommendations we made to national government, ministries and departments, people just ignore it. And clearly we need to take action around that, and we foresee a process through this committee and other committees that we get the responses from human settlements, from transport, from health, from education, from welfare, which is social development, from COCTA and the others. I will be writing as the chairperson on behalf of the Commission to this portfolio committee and also to the ministers and to the presiding officers of Parliament to request that we get those responses, because we have made, you know, in 2 years ago we've made a submission on infrastructure and growth. The year after that we've made a submission on rural development, but with giving attention to infrastructure investment in rural areas so that we deal with the rural poverty and inequality. We've also made recommendations last year, which is effectively responded on their part on urban development and urban infrastructure development. So there's a multiple recommendations we've made and we haven't heard from these departments. What we do, we circulate these things. Notwithstanding those concerns that we table, we're going to take forward. The 2017 budget announced establishment of the National Health Insurance Fund in 2017-18 through changes made to the medical tax credit. This proposal is only allocated $64 million in 2018-19. While most of the funds are allocated to national health insurance conditional grants. So we need to start thinking about that relative to the proposals that were made. We are concerned that the wage bill negotiations, although funds have been allocated, we don't know what the outcome is going to be, could worsen the already tight fiscal position. I'm not talking about wage bill, I'm talking about the public service, the civil servants wage bill. Could worsen the already tight fiscal position of provinces in particular, because provinces carry the fiscal burden of national negotiated schemes. If agreement reaches in excess of the expectations, so that is a matter of concern. And we have noted that the Minister of Finance did make some input around that funding for higher education should be accompanied with measures to improve quality and throughput. And there's a need to continue reviewing the vertical division of revenue to ensure alignment with responsibility of each sphere. Hence the importance of a rethink and a relook on the equitable share allocation. Many questions have been raised before about whether the equitable share is equitable, given that the former Bantustan provinces, there are huge backlogs around infrastructure, and there's a need to look properly at that. So, Chairperson, that's our views on the division of revenue. And I think our view is fairly that we think we've adequately managed, the Minister of Finance and the Treasury has adequately managed to respond to the economic conditions we find ourselves in, but also to ensure that we protect the social wage spending, social grants, welfare, education, the basic basket of services to our citizens. Thank you, Chairperson.
Prof. and your team, thank you very much for the presentation. I cannot agree more with you on the referral of the recommendations that you made to the departments. to this committee so that we can, in our own way, put pressure on the departments to respond. Because I want to believe that judging your recommendations by their good intentions, the aim was to bring about improvement in those areas of work that you are recommending. Thank you very much. Honourable members, you have been listening to an interesting and insightful presentation by FFC. And I like the way you've simplified things for us. Now I'm going to ask the members to interrogate the presentation. Are you sure you want to speak now before I allow them to speak? Okay.
We got Dr. Krish Kumar, one of our commissioners. This is his last swan song with us.
This is his
last swan song with us. He's been at the FFC for slightly more than two terms, and today will be his last with us as a commissioner, Dr. Krish Kumar. I thought I need to introduce him. He came in late.
Doctor, thank you very much for joining us, but why did you come to us just on your way out? I'm sure we're going to benefit more if you came even earlier, but I want to believe that your experience also, you know, I'm sure you've shared it with the remaining team members, and we will continue to benefit from it through them. So thank you very much. Honourable members, I'm now opening the floor for interrogations. I know we don't have time because most members want to go for, the flights, the very few flights, so they want us to leave this meeting earlier so that they can catch their flight. So I'll be happy if members can respond. We don't have time. What I'm reading here, because I must also be able to read between the lines, is that members are so satisfied that they don't have questions. Okay. Honorable Member Manana.
Now, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's welcome the presentation. It's clear and straightforward. Thank you for that. But seeing that the National Treasurer is with us, as the Prof has indicated that the recommendation that they have submitted to Treasury, they never responded to it. I'm sure we are hearing it loud and clear that you need to respond. But I will concur with the Chairperson that if you can submit those recommendations to us so that we may follow up from Treasury. But if the Treasurer can give us a clue, why are they not responding to their presentation? The second issue, Chairperson, is with regard to the slide 19, the NHI. Prof, you're saying it's a matter for noting, but if you can just go into a deeper for us to understand why are we supposed to note this instead of going into a deeper discussion with the rest of this. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Manana. If I may understand, Professor Wong Treasury responded to the recommendation. Sorry. It is only transport, health, education, social development, COCTA who have not responded. So it's only Treasury that responded, but the rest did not. But thank you very much. We'll respond to the other issues. Any other input from members? Well, in your presentation, somewhere you state that National Treasury should improve access to credit markets for large cities to allow, allowing them to use their infrastructure grant funding allocations to leverage private capital. Give us cases wherein municipalities were successful in accessing private capital, and how many and for what, if you have that information. Again, you, in your presentation, also stated that as FFC, you propose that in future, a more rigorous analysis of the performance of each grant is done before the cuts are done. It is also important that in the near future, some rigorous analysis is undertaken to ascertain the impact of such reductions on households, business, and economy at large, and to draw lessons for future. Can you give us details in practical terms, how will this be done, and why can this not be done in the next budget cycle? Honorable members, Nukwanyane.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, FFC, for your presentation. I don't really have much questions. I just would like to check with regard to slide number 12, where it indicated that major rejections were with respect to human settlements, education, and health sectors. Just in the case of health sectors, I don't really see much. I see the health facility revitalization, and on the next slide, it is explained that this grant has been reduced, and looking at the amount, I don't see it as being a huge amount. Is there any other thing besides the health facility revitalization, perhaps, that you were referring to when you say a major reduction? I know that revitalization obviously will not have a very huge budget. Perhaps it's in proportion to the total budget, but just for clarity's sake, I would like to check that. And then on the next slide, 14, the HIV and AIDS grant has been reduced, mainly due to underspending. Now, you go on to say that the emphasis should be on the importance of finding the root cause of poor performance and addressing those challenges instead of reducing allocations. Do you really think that when people are underperforming, underspending, you should instead, I understand if we want to establish what the root causes are, but should we be prioritizing saving those people from the cut just while they are underperforming or underspending? You know, that is just the question of underspending and underperforming, and we say shouldn't we rather be finding the root cause so that you can then allocate money knowing that people are going to spend it? I'm just saying this in view of the fact that the budget cuts and the budget constraints are there for everybody to see. So why should we give underperforming people all that money? Thanks.
Now, if I may just come in again on your health reduced budget. Maybe this one is for National Treasury. With the introduction of NHI, why did you still find it necessary? Because it's a new program, and the way I see it, it's very demanding, that program, and it would need sufficient budget for its implementation. And if I remember well, we are now at its implementation stage. Now, what informed the decision to still reduce the budget from health? Because it has got this, to me, it's a huge program that needs sufficient funding so that it can take off the ground and also be successful in terms of its implementation. And then I know that the budget principle is you reduce the budget where there has been under expenditure. Now here under human resource, human settlement, you reduce 7.2 billion over the MTF, regardless of its good performance. Good performance. I know that you also have been operating under pressure, but have these principles been changed now to say that what will inform budget cuts is underperformance, budget underperformance, but now these ones have performed and regardless to cut their budget. I don't know if my understanding is clear, but it is not clear to clarify because I'm here to learn from you. Thank you very much. We will then allow, let's just start with the National Treasury, and then we will then request Professor Platis and team to respond to the questions raised by the honourable members. I welcome honourable members. I welcome reps from NCOP, am I right?
Salga.
Oh, Salga. Okay, so that's fine. Thank you very much. Yes, we were waiting for you. Thank you very much for coming. All right. National Treasury.
Thank you very much. With regard to the question posed, the Chair was correct to point out that the National Treasury did respond to all the recommendations directly related and indirectly related to the Division of Revenue, and that the concern is regarding the other departments. The FFC also then indicated what they intend to do to deal with those delinquent departments. But also, I think what is quite important to highlight is that yesterday we had squash in our presentation, and the part that I would have presented yesterday was unfortunately squashed off the agenda because of time constraints. But if you look at the presentation of National Treasury that we handed out yesterday, if you look at the slides starting on page 33, there we indicate how we've responded to the committee's recommendations on the Division of Revenue Bill. And if you then go to slides 36 to 41, we then indicated how we responded to the FFC recommendations. So that will be useful reading, and if we requested to present, of course, those slides, we would not have any problems with that. Then with regard to with the municipal borrowing issue and the information there, there's quite a bit of information that's available, and what we'll give to the Chair is a recently released municipal borrowing bulletin that we released, because currently National Treasury is busy with a huge initiative to support municipalities, the viable municipalities that are ready to go to the credit market to borrow funds for infrastructure investment. And it's very important to differentiate long-term borrowing from the short-term borrowing. The short-term borrowing is where you hear the horror stories, where municipality owe water boards and an Eskom, and, you know, also that huge amount of debt is owed to municipalities for service delivered. But those got to do with short-term borrowing. The long-term borrowing is a good thing, and I'm glad Chris is here, because I'm sure he will 100% support me, because he's also the TFO of Etiquette Municipality in his other day job. What we're trying to do is to get all stakeholders on board to understand the importance of borrowing, but also to ensure that borrowing is done for the right purposes and that we definitely get value spent. And we can leave this with the Chair for distribution. It is the latest municipal borrowing bulletin. Then there's also information on municipal borrowing in Section 71 reports, which is also reported on a quarterly basis. That's also available on National Treasury's website. Then with regard to the reductions, and let me start with the human settlements before I jump over to the NHI. There's a number of reasons why grants were reduced. It wasn't just underspending. Other considerations also included issues such as the clarity of policy or the value of spending. So you could have a situation where the grant is completely spent in total, but it's not well spent, because you can, for example, buy something for 20 rand, where you can actually get it for 10 rand. So the full grant is spent, but half the value is lost in those type of instances. So with regard to human settlements, the reason why the budget has been cut in that respect is because there's some uncertainties with regard to policy. When you look at human settlements, there's a number of policies that allow for multiple approaches to housing. And generally the response is just with regard to RTP, and one of the concerns that we often highlight as National Treasury is where those houses are located. And it's far from economic opportunities. It requires quite a bit of investment in municipal infrastructure where you could get much more value if you place those human settlements closer to job in what we call integrated human settlements. So there's quite a bit of policy work that's still required on the human settlement side. So that is the reason why the grant has been cut and not necessary for under expenditure. And I think it will be quite useful if the FFT can also, you know, as part of their response, also, you know, input in this regard. Then with regard to the NHI, again, it's a very important reform. And again, there's and the same will apply also with regard to education. If you start, and I mean, I'll come back to the NHI thing in detail, but if you look at health infrastructure spending and you look at education infrastructure spending, the question that you need to ask, do you need to develop a lot more new schools, or do you need to look at existing facilities and ensure that they are properly maintained? Because you can have an oversupply of schools, you can have an oversupply of medical facilities. It doesn't really help if you create a medical facility, but you don't have the supporting backup, such as having doctors there, having nurses there, and the like. And we've had instances in the past where schools were built, but there were no equipment and there were no teachers. So the issue is that's very important here is that infrastructure is aligned also with the operating expenditure. So what has happened on the NSI fund side is the cuts that took place was not on the initiatives that linked back to the NSI fund or the NSI reform. It linked back to a cut in the health infrastructure expenditure of that grant. Again, that links up again to the issue of do we need to build new health facilities or do we need to maintain existing health facilities? So the cut has been taken place in that regard. I hope, I don't know if maybe Stephen, if you would like to add anything more.
Thanks, Wendy. Just to add on to what Wendy has highlighted under the HSDT cuts, you know, some of those cuts actually remained in the sector because if honourable members will remember, there are two new grants in the provincial fiscal space, and that's on the housing, provincial emergency housing grant, as well as the Title Deeds grant. And that is to, the Title Deeds grant, for example, is to improve the performance of the housing market by releasing these asset classes to those who then own the publicly provided housing. So that is to improve it. So that's actually staying within the sector itself. And the emergency housing, both in the provincial space and the municipal space, that cut went to actually fund those two new grants in that space. So just to highlight those two things.
Okay. Can we go back to FFC to respond to the number of questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. we will respond to different people will respond to different positive comments and questions raised. I just want to reconfirm that the from our perspective, Honourable Manana, is that every year the National Treasury responds to our recommendations and submissions, and it responds. Its response is based on what we're saying with regard to those things that has got a direct impact on the fiscal framework, but also direct impact in terms of the total appropriation and allocation to that. What we're not getting is What are the other departments' responses to our recommendations? The other ministries, because we recommend to government, not to the National Treasury, though the lion's share of the recommendations is about the division of revenue. And that's a matter that is of concern. And every year when Parliament engages with departments and then we lack. But we haven't read our submissions. And our submissions, and not you, I'm talking about the departments. Because in many of those we're talking about service delivery, pricing and costing of services, the management of the finances, issues around the conditional grant to the equitable share allocation, and but also specifically to what happens in each sector. And we haven't had those responses. Because clearly some of those responses, it doesn't sit within the National Treasury. It sits in the light functioning ministries and departments. On the matter of the rigorous analysis of a conditional grant, I think it is critical for the honourable members to note that the origins of conditional grants is to fund something which is a national priority, a national program that's a priority, but also to deal with the spillover effects on a particular program that gets implemented. And it is also an initial signal of something that will become eventually a policy, a budget policy matter going forward. And what we of concern, other than the hardcore argument of there's not sufficient fiscal space to be able to fund across the board social services and infrastructure, is that the nature of the cuts needs to be looked at in terms of how some of these grants perform. And clearly, there's the issues of underspending in certain sectors on conditional grants. And that needs to be looked at. There's also the issue about how these grants perform in terms of its intent to deliver certain things and how it gets managed between provinces relative to how it's managed in national government departments. So the conditional grant obviously also drag other matters with regard to create an administration around that conditional grant, so it can actually be assessed on that. On the matters of the debt and borrowing, I'm going to ask Dr. Krish Kumar, Honourable Chair, to respond to that, and probably give more details to that, and this is a simple response. And then the staff from Dr. Mabrugu to Eddie and others can then respond to the other questions.
Thank you, Chair, and Honourable Members. I largely agree with what Wendy has actually indicated. I think, firstly, long-term borrowing can only be used for capital expenditure, and I think the short-term borrowing has got to be paid within the financial year in which you actually incur that particular debt. So it's something that cannot be changed. It's governed by the MFMA. The Municipal Bulletin number 7 that Wendy has actually circulated has got some interesting stats the chairperson raised. I think one of the things that you will see is that municipal borrowing is about 19% of total capital expenditure. So total capital expenditure is about 70.6 billion in 2017-18, and borrowings are targeted at about 13.3 billion, so 19-20% to come by borrowings. And the other interesting statistic is that the total debt owed, or the total borrowings by municipalities is about 66 billion, of which 56 billion is in respect of metros. So the other 10 billion comes from the other 250-odd municipalities that you have. And the question is, why are only metros borrowing and the other smaller cities are not borrowing? And that's something that National Treasury are working on to actually enhance the actual balance sheets of municipalities to make sure that their creditworthiness is improved to ensure that they get access to the actual debt and capital markets. But, Chair, from a practitioner's perspective, I just want to just caution on debt. I think we know that central government rules in terms of debt and how it's actually constraining the actual ability to do other things. With regard to municipalities, we must also look at the fact that if they borrow recklessly, if they don't borrow in terms of good, prudent system of actually sticking to the necessary ratios, affordability, sustainability, it will really impact on tariffs and consumers. So I think we need to be very careful about going down the path of being reckless about debt. So it's an important issue. I think that to actually really stimulate the economy, we really need to actually, particularly where there's economic opportunities, to actually borrow from. But for the social side of things, we need to rely on grants. So I think if National Treasury are suggesting to move away from grant funding for metros and for other municipalities, just want to caution, it will have a huge impact. Thank you.
Can I now ask the Dr. Ramos and others to respond to the other questions? Then?
Thank you, Chair. I think most of the questions have been addressed. I'll just embellish on two of them. I think what's unique this year around conditional grants that we need to emphasize is they are being used as an instrument in very different circumstances to the circumstances that we typically use conditional grants for. We're using them as an instrument for to support consolidation. So this is what is unique about the whole setup. And so when it comes to criteria for using conditional grants for that particular purpose, this is where we're saying as Financial and Fiscal Commission, perhaps we need to think a lot more in terms of how we use this new old instrument called conditional grant as an instrument for consolidation, because in the past they haven't been made for that purpose. They've been made essentially for spillover effect, to give effect to national priorities. But what ought to be the criteria and conditions for conditional grants when you are using them as an instrument for consolidation? This is what is the new setup that we've had to deal with. And the one area that we are emphasizing here is to make more stringent the monitoring and evaluation of the impact of the cuts, so that before we go too long down that path, soon as we detect that this instrument is causing more harm than we had anticipated, then we can change tact. So that's the first embellishment around management of conditional grants. This is unique, and we want to learn in future when we do use conditional grants as an instrument for consolidation, what is it that we are learning during this process. Then, Honorable Manana, you asked why on slide 19, why on the NHI issues we call those matters for noting and to give an explanation as to why we're not getting into that discussion at this point. The reason why we are not getting into the discussion at the moment is because there's a lot of ongoing work behind the scenes, and we don't want to come and mislead the committee around issues where the decisions have not yet been taken. And this, in particular, where the Financial and Fiscal Commission comes in, that we would report to this committee yesterday around discussions around assignments, delegation, and urgency, and problems or enhancement of decisions around there. So rather than come and report a Financial and Fiscal Commission position on there in the absence of decision, we thought it would be more prudent just to alert the Standing Committee on Appropriations that this is a big issue where a lot of other work behind the scenes is taking place, and then as soon as we have something tangible to report that doesn't mislead the appropriations will come back and deal with those matters. That's why we flagged the particular issue.
Chair, this is the last point that we started to engage with the Minister of Health on the National Health Insurance Fund and the implications of that fund for the intergovernmental system, especially around the matter that Dr. Marubu raised around the contracting, the issue around the service provider, issues on service providers, but also the consequences around the division of revenue. And I think the Minister has raised four matters which is critical and has been raising it all the time. And one is on human resources. The other is on supply chain management. Then it's the matter of infrastructure and infrastructure maintenance, and then the financing. These things are not directly some of it is not directly linked to the NHI, but it's indirect to the NHI. And clearly, when we start looking at the costing and pricing of the NHI and the implications it will have on how do we disaggregate health, or how do we understand the health function, it will have a collateral impact on the range of decentralized services that sits in provinces. So that in itself requires quite a rigorous conversation going forward, because there's no disagreement on the National Health Insurance fund. The question is how do you fund it, how do you deal with the taxing issues related to it, but also how do we deal with that relative to what we have currently in place. So there's a huge project, and the understanding is that soon we would at least call between the Minister and the FSC, our partners, into a conversation such as the National Treasury to look at these matters. So I thought that's important, because it's one of those things that we would say to this committee, it will be on our radar screen probably for the not next 3 to 5 years in terms of our own submissions, because of the implications that it will have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Are there any follow-up questions? Honourable Member McLaughlin. Honourable Member Gwabaza.
Thank you, Chair. It's not really a follow-up question. It's just a concern I have generally. The amount that Dr. Kumar mentioned, the $66 billion of total municipal borrowing at the moment, which we're now encouraging to be increased, this doesn't presently form part of our national debt in strict terms. So this is on top of national debt. So it's something else that ultimately has to be repaid out of taxpayers' pockets. So, but it's sort of disguised in a sense, because it's not part of the national budget. Now it's part of a municipal budget somewhere along the line. So you're going to have to foot the bill somewhere else. Isn't this sort of a bit of sleight of hand, passing the buck, trying to get it sort of off one radar screen and stuck onto another one, because ultimately it's the man in the streets who's going to pay all this debt back again. Now we sort of say, no, it's a good idea, let them get on with it, because it's going to fund the infrastructure, because central government can't afford to pay for the infrastructure. So now we're saying to the local governments, well, you guys pay for it then. You can borrow the money from wherever you can get it in the market. Use our guarantee of paying you a grant as security for it, and you go ahead and do it. And I just have a fear that we're compounding a problem that we already have and are not dealing with very well, Now we're sort of spreading the load and making the problem worse ultimately. I'd appreciate the comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member Tobaza.
Chair, let me quickly ride on the point Honourable McLaughlin is very good. I didn't quite hear who guarantees these borrowings by municipality. I might have missed it if it was mentioned. Because honestly, it would be a worry if we encourage this kind of borrowing to add to the national debt, which is already under very, very serious strain. Secondly, the monitoring mechanism on the expenditure of these borrowings it's being said that it's for long-term projects, but we know that municipalities have done other things before, using funds to pay salaries and other things. What guarantees do we have that these borrowings are going to be targeted as long-term borrowings so that we see the benefits there? Linked to that, Chair, I'm wondering whether we really have a plan to balance these borrowings on the strength of improving own revenue of municipalities, especially improving the efficiency of revenue collection. Because otherwise the effect could just as well be that the borrowings might lead to increases in water, electricity tariffs, rates, etc., and so on. How do we balance all of these things? The last thing, Chairperson, is I see that you mentioned that the human settlement grants have been performing well, 96% performance, which looks good. However, the monitoring thereof is quite questionable. I was deployed in a place where the parliamentary constituency office initiated a project on RCP house. I will not mention where that is, otherwise I may not be able to visit that place again. And literally, it's on the 25,000 RDP house project, and literally every single family has an RDP house. If I built my nice big family house, I would still have one or two RDP houses in my yard. That's what has happened. And I can tell you that project has overspent by far. I don't know whether it is lack of clarity of this RTP policy as to who it should target, whether it is weak monitoring of the implementation. And so the 96% good expenditure might look good on paper. It's a different story on the ground. And this is very prevalent in semi-urban and rural areas. I'm a rural boy as well. So I have seen these things, and it's a bit of a worry that we have not tightened on the implementation of the RDP housing policy to target very, very specific needy families. And then, of course, you have every child of you know, advanced teenage age applying for an RDP house and getting in what looks like a very an affording family. Let me not say affluent, an affording family. So these are some of the challenges. Can you check that?
Observations are that education infrastructure grants have been doing well,
but ACD has underspent by 750 million. In terms of last year's plan, ACD was due to merge with the education infrastructure grant. Do you perhaps, in your analysis, what is the cause for the measure not having taken place? And I'm asking this because I know that your interest would be, has always been, you would like, you prefer a direct grant versus indirect grant. Am I correct? That has been your preference, which I think would have been implemented if this has happened. You know, but if you can explain to us on what do you think is the reason for the failure, you know, of the measure. Maybe it's in the process, but we don't have information for now. But if you have, you can share with us. And also, are you able to explain to us the disparity in performance of the two conditional grants, education infrastructure grant and ACT? I think that's all, and then we will then wrap up our engagement with your good self so that you can move on to the next presentation by Salka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Given the substantive nature of the issue on debt servicing and reciprocity, I'm going to ask Chris to answer that because he sits in that space. So just be aware that Honorable Klachen also comes from a municipality before he got here. Chris, don't be trapped by that word.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be very objective. I think just firstly, municipalities are not afforded any guarantees. There's no securitization of any loans. So we borrow on the strength of our own balance sheet and our own affordability. Like I said, we've got to be prudent for debt management. As an independent sphere of government that works independently with other spheres of government, I think it's appropriate for municipalities to borrow, but at the right levels, and it needs to be well managed, like I said. So in principle, I don't have a problem with it, and it falls within the funded mandate of municipalities, and they must accordingly borrow. What we're finding, on the contrary, is that municipalities are underborrowed, they're undergeared. So if you look at the municipal bulletin number 7 again, you will see that only 19% of the total capital expenditure is being met from borrowing, about 50% or more, 50 to 60% coming from grants, and the rest from internal funds. And internal funds are basically your depreciation. And the like. And what Honorable McCann was mentioning was where you actually are able to fund from your own cash resources capital expenditure. So it's your internal funds that you generate by way of tariffs. Now, it's not very prudent or healthy to actually considering the different backlogs that we have, not to maximize the opportunities to borrow and to roll out services at a more rapid rate. But at the same time, we need to be responsible about that. And there needs to be the right balance between grant funding from the center, from the state coming through, as well as what municipalities can afford to do. So I think it's that delicate balance and how we strike that becomes very important in terms of how we manage debt. But it's not a one-day discussion. It's a very important discussion. National Treasury have been, and rightly so, preparing municipalities in terms of being able to access the market, like I said, more easily, in terms of ensuring that they are more prudent with regard to how they manage the fiscal effort in particular. What we're finding is that municipalities perhaps, and even the metros are guilty of this, they're not maximizing fiscal effort. There's an opportunity to collect far more aggressively, if you like, from those that can afford to pay, and that's why Wendy mentioned the issue of outstanding debt. So I think there is that opportunity to actually make sure that all monies that are owing are actually collected. There's also leakage in terms of whether you have water losses or electricity losses, you know, the high water loss, etc. So all of those are factors that we need to prove efficiency, that we need to actually really look at, and productivity in terms of being able to actually deliver a far more effective service that's far more cost effective. So borrowing is ultimately something that should not be just overlooked. It's an essential tool that's there to actually make sure that we are able to roll out services far more effectively in terms of shorter time frame, and capital expenditure's got to be funded either by capital, by putting in by way of loans or grants or from your own internal reserves. And if they don't exist, then it's good to borrow, provided you can actually substantiate it in terms of your borrowing. I'm going to venture to respond to the issue about RDPRs. And I fully agree that the 96% spend from a qualitative aspect could be problematic. I think human settlements have come a long way in terms of the fact that they now make you stick to the actual values that they deem appropriate in terms of servicing costs, in terms of top structures and the like. So in the past, you had some latitude. Now they restrict you. Anything over and above what you spend in terms of the norms that they set would have to come from the municipality. So they don't fund it. It's highly unlikely that they will fund it. And I know certainly from a metro perspective, if we incur any expenditure outside the actual norms set by them for top structure or servicing costs, we've got to find the money ourselves. So they are very stringent about that, but I'm not sure whether that applies across the board. I can't speak for them, but I'm just giving you analysis, some comfort that in the metros we are monitored very strictly in terms of that. The last point about monitoring was who monitors the debt repayments, etc. The way that we borrow is that there is oversight by provincial as well as national in terms of the overall borrowing. So when we want to borrow, we've got to put up the necessary reports to national and province in terms of them determining the need. We also indicate what we will be funding. The AG will also audit to make sure the funds are used for the desired purpose. So to misuse those funds for creating costs, it could be tucked away, but you don't see, but really you can't really do that. But you've got to show an asset that you're financing. It can't be self-used for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Well, the merger didn't happen yet. I think part of the reason would have been that there were certain projects which were not completed, which needed to have been finalized before the merger happened. So, but if you look at the historical expenditure performance on the education infrastructure grants and the RCD program, they've been rather skewed favorably in favor of the education infrastructure grant. So over the years, since the RCD was actually introduced, I think expenditure levels must have been at around 60% average, but we can always send the details of annual expenditure. So part of the reason why RCD would not have spent, of course, is because the national government want to go into provinces and actually implement the projects which sometimes are not in line with the provincial infrastructure plan. So that is why the commission has always maintained that RCD should be merged with the education infrastructure grant. But we can send the detailed analysis of the expenditure performance.
Mr. I'm sure you'll be able to respond to the disparity in the expenditure between education infrastructure
grant and RCD? And then Prof, you will then round up.
Thank you very much. Just maybe to start with a bit of background of where the CD program started and why that grant was created in the first instance. After many, many years, we are now seeing very good performance and infrastructure spending by provinces, but it wasn't always like that in the past. So in the beginning stages, a number of provinces had huge challenges actually with infrastructure. So what happens is that at one stage, there was some legal action taken and some of the school infrastructure was determined to be really below standard. It didn't include decent water facilities, sanitation facilities, the like. So what then happens is that in order to support provinces that struggle to put in place that infrastructure, National then came in, and then in terms of very selected pre-identified projects, so the CD program got contained projects of the past. That is, and what you look now at the education infrastructure grant, it contains projects of now, to give a differentiation between the two. So the Department of Basic Education is just dealing with those historical backlogs in school infrastructure where the school infrastructure does not make the grade. And the challenge that we had originally in the National Department of Basic Education also experienced some challenges in actually rolling out that program. But they are currently, they have also built up quite a lot of capacity themselves. So what happened is, and if you look at the CD program, it is not, throughout all provinces at the same level. There are certain provinces where the backlogs were much more than in other provinces. So if you look at the CD program, you will see like two or three, but particularly one province actually featuring on the CD program. And what happens is that when we did the merger, the province concerned where the majority of those mergers are, actually indicated to us that they can deal with the existing school infrastructure backlogs, but if we need to add on top of that the historical school infrastructure backlogs, it will be too much for them to cope. So there is agreement between that province and also the
which
National Department.
Remember, we are a democratic government, so let's be transparent.
The majority of the backlogs are in Eastern Cape.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where the agreement was reached. So it is still the intention, and nothing has changed that we want to merge those two programs over time. But again, we shouldn't put such a burden on then on a province that actually indicated to us that they would rather that the National Department of Basic Education completes that SED program. But again, we've indicated, like in the past as well, those are where the grants, where the indirect and direct grants can change in year as and when the capacity is full. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And then round up the conference.
Thank you very much. I think we have actually covered all the questions that all of us, the honourable members. Just to reaffirm that we are of the view that the cut that happened was forced upon us given the muted economic growth that we experienced as a country. We also of the view that there's a need to start looking at the revenue and spending capacities at provincial level and at the municipal level. And it's not only about money, but it's also got to do with those other capabilities, considerations that need to be looked at within municipalities and provinces. I think going forward, there's indeed a need to bring an interlink between financial performance and management and service delivery performance and management, and to see exactly where is the value for money. Within provinces in particular. So there's a need to going forward to start looking again at whether the way we're financing and the service delivery models that we have, especially in relation to those ones with various concurrency
a shared function between national and provincial government, where the fiscal instruments that we are using there, where it's appropriate, and whether we shouldn't start thinking about an asymmetry, a process to some of these methods, because it's quite clear that if we treat all one size fits all, sometimes certain things are not happening in certain provinces because of the historic capacity deficit that we have in certain provinces and pockets within certain provinces relative to a strong provinces like Gauteng, where the infrastructure base is in place, social and physical infrastructure is in place, and see exactly how do we then find, how do we advise national government to use targeted approaches in interventions in some of these provinces. Otherwise, the provinces that are lacking in capabilities over the years, you'll see another 20 years of those provinces lacking in terms of protecting social spending, but in particular protecting the services that need to be provided to our young children, and especially in education and health and welfare. On the National Health Insurance Fund, just to reconfirm that we are in support of that, but there's a number of matters that need to be resolved, especially the impact it will have on the intergovernmental fiscal system. There are matters of constitutional law that needs to be looked at. There are matters in terms of how the constitution gets changed relative to what the fund intends, and also how do we then define, on the one hand disaggregating, and the other hand then define what sits where in terms of the health services. We are in support that there's a need to look at what is the capabilities of the national minister with regard to health provision relative to human resource management, with regard to supply chain in terms of paying our services, goods and services, drugs and other forms of important goods and services for the health service, and also the matter around maintenance of infrastructure. And clearly, matters like state matters of ambulances can't be in private hands like it has been in certain provinces. There has to be, it's a state responsibility to deliver emergency services. And there are concerns also in terms of the top layer of appointments in health. There are concerns that need to be dealt with there. So our view that on conditional grants there's clearly a need to keep the fiscal instrument, but a need to look at how does the fiscal instrument, given its raison d'etre, how does it help in terms of policy shift, but also yielding some improvements within the governmental system. We will come back to this committee soonest to also report to you on who has chosen, either by default or design, not to respond to our recommendations that we have made, because our recommendations have got huge, if you like, in certain instances, policy implications, financing implications, to service delivery and administrative implications. Like we said to you the last time, that if we knew that time when we were doing the cost of norms approach what it would require, then we would be probably better off. Because these days, at the time has come for us to properly to costing and pricing our services retrospectively and also looking forward, so that we know exactly what is the cost of different service inputs and the throughput of services to come. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you so much. That rounded off the discussion with ourselves. Honourable Member, I will now request
always forget to press this button. All right, Salgar, to come over and do the presentation for us. As they move to occupy their rightful seat for their presentation, I will then allow members just have a 5 minutes break, allowing them to move and. And then I just want to check FFC's program. After this, are you leaving? We would like you to stay so that maybe if there are questions, you can also respond to those questions from Salga.
No, we're not leaving, Chair. We just
thank you very much.
Just in chair.
Okay. 1 minute tea break. Oh, 5 minutes tea break. I said 5 minutes tea break. Alex,
yeah.
what you do and how you go around. But Sam might want to do that with mine. So I'll check with her.
Honourable Member, ladies and gentlemen, shall we settle down? I take it that Salga is ready to proceed. Okay, we will now allow Salga to present to the Standing Committee on Appropriations. And I think it would be nice for us to know who is representing Sada.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I am Councillor T.M. Charles, NCOP Rep for SALGA. I'm with my brother here, Mr. James Matsini. Honorable Chair, SALGA welcomes the opportunity to make comments on the division of the revenue bill. The slow microeconomic growth and national revenue collection targets and new competing priorities all have placed great strain on whole of government equitable share of resources. Though the microeconomic climate has been revised upwards, it will take some time for the country to grow at a rate that supports our development agenda. SARS not meeting its collection targets has translated into increase of VAT by 1%. To further close the fiscal gap, cuts in local government infrastructure grants have also been initiated. SALGA welcomes the protection of the local government equitable share against these cuts, though we still maintain our position of the 9% share of revenue. The funding of the free higher education program by government will translate into revenue being prioritized from competing critically as important programs. Honorable Chair, I will now hand over to my technical resource, Mr. James Mazie, to take you through the presentation as tabled by SALGA. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Honorable Councillor Charles, through you, Honorable Chairperson, and MPL's councillors, colleagues, all protocol observed. I am just going to take you through the presentation that I had prepared. And the presentation in detail is around three areas. It will touch on the budget speech as presented by the then Minister of Finance. It will touch on some of the impact of the cuts on the local government fiscal capabilities, and then we'll delve into the division of the revenue bill as was tabled after the budget speech. Basically, Chairperson, our first slide there of introduction is just to indicate that SALGA, as a representative body of local government, has been fulfilling its mandate of lobbying and advocating for local government.
We can hear you. Or just put the mic in front of your please say
about that. And we have participated in the budget forum in September 2018. We have contributed to the consolidation of the division of the revenue bill. And also just to indicate that we do have a lot of technical engagement with our stakeholders, your national treasury, your Department of Corporate Governance, Finance and Fiscal Commission, and that this engagement really helps in terms of clarifying issues, though we might not necessarily agree with them. One aspect of this presentation that SALGA would like to highlight is the fact that we welcome and endorse the fact that the endorsement of the budget forum, of the technical budget forum, as a technical platform that will support the budget forum. That will help a lot in terms of refining our engagement as we prepare for our IGL engagements. In terms of the budget speech, Chair, we are basically saying that the SALGA National Treasury has forecasted an improved economic outlook for the country and has revised higher projections for economic growth. The government now sees the SA economy growing by an average of 1.65% during the 2018-19 financial year compared to an estimate of 1.3% that was reported 5 months ago in the medium-term budget policy statement. Similarly, the Reserve Bank has revised upwards their economic outlook and projections to 1.5%. These upward adjustments are premised partly on the perceived improved business and investor confidence over the past few months, though we still remain cautiously optimistic about these projections. And based on that cautious optimistic projections shall note that the last global government GDP was set to 2% increase, while during the mid-2000s, that was when the GDP was very high and doing very well. Against other proposals, Chair, the speech also highlighted the interest of National Treasury to assist local government sphere in improving revenue collection strategies and methods. This will not only create a situation where local government might be less reliant on the national fiscus through their own revenue, but also improve credit worthiness of municipalities and further overcome this. Also around budget speech, Chair, the National Treasury announced that local government will be allocated 9.2% of the total budget, which amounts to 1.2 trillion, and the fact that provincial government will get 43% and the remainder will go to national government. However, we still maintain, Chair, that the sharing of these scarce resources shows that local government, despite being the constitutional conduit of service delivery closest to the communities of the country, still receive, and by quite some margin, the smallest share of the national fiscal. Accordingly, we will reiterate our call to review the vertical division of the resources in the equitable share formula. We will also repeat our call for municipalities to be given more revenue-generating instruments in order to finance the ever-increasing service delivery needs. It also remains to be seen whether the government compensation bill can be limited to the average of increases of 7.3%. And the spending on higher education is the fastest growing component after the announcement made by the then president last year. And we agree that the human capital development is critical to this South Africa's growth potential and to adjust to incorporate free higher education of 7 billion, which is in keeping with its objective. And just share on the impact of cuts, the infrastructure cuts, and also on the VAT increase. We indicate that another concerning aspect of the budget are the proposed cuts of government infrastructure spending, especially at local government level. We as others believe infrastructure spend to be one of the more core components of attract economic growth, and in so doing elevate poverty and inequality which has plagued our local communities. More work will have to be undertaken to assess the possible impact of these cuts on the macroeconomic growth. The cut, therefore, is of approximately 5.3.5 billion of conditional grants, including municipal infrastructure grants specifically of concern. One of the points that were made at the special budget forum was the fact that the municipal infrastructure grant is the only grant that some of the municipalities have, and we believe that that might have an intended consequence of impacting those municipalities badly. The cut on the infrastructure grant also skews the budget in favor of social services at the expense of economic services. This could have a detrimental effect on the endeavor to stimulate the growth economy. One of the outstanding features of the budget 2018 is the decision to raise the VAT by 1%, which net the fiscus an additional 22 billion in the 2018-19 financial year. Obviously, from SAGA's point of view, there are concerns regarding the effect of the increased rate on the lower income earners and the subsequent impact this may have on municipal revenues and greater dependence of free basic services. This could increase municipal household debt and put more strain on municipal revenues and the ability to deliver services. The impact of that increase on an already larger number of indigent households would also need to be closely monitored. And Chair, just on specifically the Division of Revenue Bill, SAGA would like to welcome the following clauses as amended by the Division of Revenue Bill. Municipal borrowing against conditional grants. There was a lot of engagement around municipal borrowing in the previous engagement around the FSC presentation, and we believe that the amendment of this clause, which removes the onus of National Treasury to approve pledging of grants for borrowing against future grant transfers and to leverage private finance, will be able to allow municipalities to better plan their finances around leveraging infrastructure financing. The second clause that we endorse, Chair, is, and that we greatly welcome as well, that is the ensuring transfers from provinces to municipalities that is aligned to SLAs. This clause is closely linked to some of the concerns that SAGA has raised in the past around the powers and functions issues. And we believe that by making sure that whatever function that is a provincial function and goes to municipalities is met by service level agreements that are funded, will be able to go a long way towards mitigating this challenge that we have in our sector. And just to touch on the comments made by the FFC Chair, specifically extracted those ones where SAGA made comments,
and specifically with Chapter 2 with respect to strengthening the integrated urban development framework, as well as city support for positive impact on urban development. Salazar's response there is that we accept the recommendation as this is in line with the infrastructure grant review principles. And in terms of Chapter 7, with the objective of improving industrial diversity and economic growth in urban municipalities, we highlight the fact that economic concentration is one of the indicators that rating agencies consider when assessing local government credit ratings. And the fact that South Africa is one of the most economically concentrated countries in the world due to its past government and structural policies, and South Africa therefore supports any initiative that aims to make municipal spaces economically diverse. And in terms of Chapter 7, Chair, in order to enhance intergovernmental instruments, institutional and governance arrangements pertaining to the provision and maintenance of information and communication technology in urban municipalities, SALGA's response is around the Municipal Standard Chart of Accounts, which is a regulation that was introduced by Treasury 2014 and which came into effect, I believe, last year, 2017. And we have been participating in the rollout of this regulation since its inception, Chair. And our position is that due to the technical nature of the regulation, there's not enough capacity and there's not enough technical expertise to execute this grant. We welcome the fact that the FFC has made a recommendation that the FMG, the financial management grant, must be ring-fenced to support municipalities that are struggling to implement the regulation. But we strongly believe that the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, which is closely aligned to ICT reforms, should also be considered to support municipalities around the MSCOA regulation. And we believe that the two departments, your Treasury and COCTA, might sit around the table and ensure that they find a way of allowing municipalities to be supported around this very, very important reform, because we definitely do support the MSCOA regulation. And around Chapter 11, with respect to own revenue diversification and financing models for urban municipalities, I can say this is linked to the clause that clause 8 of the Division of Revenue Bill. I think these two aspects of borrowing and infrastructure financing, and the fact that SALGA definitely does support the recommendation. The public-private partnerships are a form of innovative funding instruments that a municipality can explore. And this recommendation links to the recent review of the local government borrowing framework. The colleagues said they will share a bulletin now. I believe it's aligned to that borrowing framework review as well. And also the urban development framework, integrated urban development framework. And definitely SALGA does support any form of supporting municipalities to be able to diversify their revenue and to explore alternative revenue streams as well. And Chair, just in detail around the new housing grant, emergency grant, what SALGA is saying that we support the creation of provincial and municipal emergency housing grants to address the need to rapidly provide temporary housing in cases of disasters. However, it's noted that the grant is not designed to address other situations covered by the Housing Code Emergency Housing Program, namely situations where evictees must be provided with alternative accommodation. Municipalities face a critical funding gap in this respect. Therefore, SALGA will be taking research to develop recommendations on the most appropriate funding mechanisms for temporary housing for those rendered homeless by eviction. These recommendations must be incorporated into a larger review of the Human Settlement Grant Framework, which is to be undertaken this year. A bullet point should be inserted under responsibilities of national government, which indicates that national department must assist and or facilitate access to land for emergency housing and resettlement purposes where required. Also on the grant issues around housing, Chair, around the informal settlement upgrading, we welcome the planned review of spending on informal, on urban informal settlement upgrades, but would advise that we must avoid creating a new conditional grant for this purpose, given that we will be reversing the qualification of grants which lower government must contend with was one of the key agreed principles of local government infrastructure review. So in the review, we agreed that we need to consolidate grants and make them more effective. Working more closely across spheres, we can ensure adequate allocation to top priority of informal settlement upgrading without contributing to complexity and burdensome reporting requirements of multiple grants. And Chair, just on the USDG, the Urban Settlement Development Grant, we do agree that when under expenditure and under performance is identified, the department may shift funds between municipalities in line with DORA processes and requirements and with the concurrence of donor and receiving municipalities. We must raise caution that both National Treasury and the National Department must ensure strict adherence to Section 18 requirements and due process in affecting the shifts, including adequate notice and opportunity for municipalities to respond. And Chair, finally, on the housing grants, around the gazetting of the HSDG funds to accredited municipalities, as per Section 12.6b, provinces must gazette the amount of planned HSDG expenditure per municipality accredited at Level 1 and Level 2, and specify the amount to be transferred to the municipality and the amount to be spent by the provinces. Our survey research has showed that only in 2017-18 did all 9 provinces finally comply with the requirements to gazette, but none of the provinces yet comply with the requirements to disaggregate. And we believe that National Treasury and the NDHS must properly enforce DORA. If provinces do not comply, Section 1010 must be activated. And on issues of funding gaps around waste management, Chair, basically what you're saying there is that we need to have a differentiated approach to funding of waste infrastructure and specialist equipment for specific regions and districts. The waste sector currently has a backlog of approximately 10% in terms of the provision of services throughout the whole value chain process of waste management, i.e. collection, transportation, storage and disposal. Specialist infrastructure and equipment is required. The onus to fund the infrastructure is through the local government equitable share as far as operational issues are concerned, and through municipal own revenue as far as capital issues are concerned. SADA has identified 27 high-priority district municipalities with high indigent profiles, budgetary constraints, and limited borrowing capabilities that place a burden on their ability to procure these products. It costs the municipality an average of at least $8.5 million to procure the equipment that covers the whole waste management value chain. SADA hereby proposes that a process of applying differentiated approach towards funding of waste equipment and infrastructure for the 27 priority municipalities be considered. For example, realigning the mix for those particular municipalities to be able to procure this very high-intensive infrastructure and equipment. This process will allow for a seamless unlocking and improvement of waste management services in these regions. And Chair, with regards to the funding for environmental performances, based on current reporting, which is environmental protection, which is through the EPSCoA, which was mentioned earlier, the South definitely support as far as integration and alignment of reporting throughout the whole sphere. The new EPSCoA-based reporting category for environmental management provided by National Treasury is a very small part of the entire municipal budget, accounting for around 1% of the total municipal expenditure in all municipal categories. There appears to be local municipalities in particular who could internally allocate funds within the existing municipal budgets with a very small improvement in efficiency and governance administration. To illustrate the point, Chair, it would require only an average of 0.8% improvement in governance and administration, efficiency and equivalent reduction and other expenditure with zero impact to double the average current local municipality's level of expenditure on the environmental management. While operational resources appear to be adequate, funds to implement are a key gap. Coastal management planning and implementation is a prime example among DMs of inadequate funding. Also around the funding on environmental performance, where fees for environmental management services are gazetted, municipalities become constrained in their ability to cover their costs. For example, regulations prescribing atmospheric emission licenses fees were published in March 2016. Unfortunately, municipalities have noted that these fees are lower than either their costs or in some cases the fees that municipalities were already charging. It is unclear how municipalities are expected to fund the shortfall given the presence of these prescribed fees, which limit their ability to recover their costs. And finally, Chair, just around the future research work that you want to consider, around the financial and fiscal repercussions of EFCOM's role in the electricity distribution industry on local government,
one of the most contentious issues that SAGA has been raising over the years around ESCOM's role as a distributor of electricity in municipalities, and the fact that there's no SDA signed, no service level agreements that are signed between municipalities and ESCOM, where ESCOM supplies electricity, and the continued cost of free basic services, study that has an impact on the local government equitable share, and finally share some of the work that we want to explore, especially around gas. We want to promote the processing through legislature, look at a bill that will help with the writing off of household debts in municipalities. We want to look at exploring the amendments of the Tax Administration Act to allow for payment of municipal debt before tax refunds are made. And finally, we want to amend the Municipal Systems Act, Schedule 10, which basically says that no municipal official may own municipality for a certain period of time. We want to expand that act to all employees of state in order to allow for an efficient and timely payment of municipal debts. And with that, Chair, I'll hand over to my councillor just to close the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think what is presented to the House is going to be taken care of. There's not much that I can say because everything it was instructed to him to do, so thank you.
Thank you so much for the presentation. SAGA is one of our key stakeholders. So we were not going to let this process go without them coming to present to us, sharing with us their view on the Division of Revenue Bill. Honourable members, upon reflection on the briefing, I'm going to request you to rise on clarity seeking questions.
I don't know whether SAGA has heard the statement that was made by Deputy Minister of Police a few weeks ago on the issue, specific reference to Johannesburg. On the issue of local residents, or let me put it in the manner he was saying, 80% of the residential buildings and even business accommodation is now taken over by foreign nationals, 80% occupied by foreign nationals. Now we are referring, making specific reference to Johannesburg. But of course, if you go to any other, you know, metro, especially city, you would find this a similar situation. Now I raised this issue on the back of the housing grants that you are talking to, your few last slides. that that being the observation, I don't know whether Salka has had a look into that issue, because what it says is that local government is going to start or is beginning to spend its grants, lot of revenue on not so much on the local residents who bear the brunt of paying for water, electricity, rates, tariffs, etc., and so on. And it's not, it's a national issue. I'm just raising it in Salka because the focus of the municipalities and this is where all these things are happening. I raise this also because we have raised this issue as a committee. There are a whole lot of connections, businesses that are not registered, they're not paying tax, they're not paying to the municipality, water, electricity, connections that are illegal, etc., and so on. And municipalities are losing a lot of money. Last year, I raised an issue about additions to municipal buildings in the cities that are unregulated, flats going up, further up. In some instances, the municipality is not even aware that there are further additions going up into the sky to accommodate further and so on the category of residents that I'm referring to. And so more strain is being brought to bear on the on the coffers of the municipality. Now, I'm not raising this issue as being, you know, kind of against any group of individuals. I'm raising this issue so that it's dealt with in the context of government funding that goes into these things, budgets of municipalities, revenue collection, irregular and unlawful activities that are going on, stress to the local government infrastructure, existing infrastructure, etc., and so on. And we keep on talking about government expanding, you know, allocation in terms of grants and equitable share, etc. We are not looking into some of the things that put stress on the municipalities to want more money when they can be efficiently using what they have and collecting a lot better and efficiently. If such issues were being, you know, confronted head on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. From my side, well, Salga, thank you for the presentation. But in your presentation, you then mentioned that regardless of the fact that local government is at a service delivery point, it continues to receive the smallest share of the national fiscus. Now, because you participate in these forums, the budget forum, and other intergovernmental technical committees, I would like to know on what proposals have you made in those forums and what were the responses, because I think that's where you've got to, you know, push this point so that you influence decision making on the allocations.
That's what I would like to know. And then, okay, the committee in its past report has emphasized that municipalities should review internal management structures so that resources transferred to them are used efficiently and effectively. Specifically, municipalities need to improve their revenue management, billing and debt management systems, impose cost reflective tariffs, and avoid incidences of underspending and inefficient procurement processes. I'd like you to comment on this because I want to believe that you are also doing oversight function over municipalities, and how can we ensure improvement in these areas. I will then hand over to Sauda to respond. Sauda, hand up. Please, before, ne? You know, Mr. Thorpe, I don't want to lie to you. See, because you're sitting like this, sometimes, yeah, well, sorry, but I'm not sorry, I'm sorry for that omission. Could you please come in?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And thank you very much, Salga, for the great presentation. With regards to, you know, somewhere you said that with regards to the infrastructure grant cuts, you know, which is a concern obviously with everywhere, you are saying that it has been, it shows that it is skewed in favor of social services at the expense of economic services. Actually, I think the whole budget is skewed in favor of social services. For obvious reasons, I think the issue of the infrastructure cuts also actually adds to that. Not that we are saying it's a good thing, but no cuts can be a good thing. Nobody can be happy about any cut. But I think it's in that context. I'm not talking on behalf of the people who have actually designed this budget, but it is because if we don't address the social services, then we can get ourselves into more trouble because we're actually trying to find money to fund our social services, because then it will defeat the ends of everything that we are trying to do to try and actually accommodate the most needy in our society, both in terms of infrastructure and other things. And then, but when it comes to this emergency housing grant, I'm quite concerned by the fact that evictions are not really covered there, because I'm thinking of my own province where there are so many evictions taking place, and now and again I know people have to be, and I think the policy is that you must provide accommodation. So it's not a question, but it's just a comment to say that I think this is one area that really needs serious attention, because if the municipalities then must just carry that from the equitable share, I don't think it's in our interest, all of us, in spite of all the challenges that we have. And what was the other thing? The issue of waste management. Maybe if you can just speak to that a little bit. You are saying that it is not really covered. You've got that 30% backlog in terms of equipment and all that. If you can just speak to it a little bit to explain. Thank you.
All right, over to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will definitely do my utmost best to respond adequately to the questions and comments that have been made by the floor.
Just in terms of what the honourable member just indicated, first and foremost, in terms of the issues of, I think what he's saying is that there's an issue of illegal foreign nationals occupying businesses and properties in the inner city space, and the fact that this has an impact on the provision of services and also has an impact on the bottom line of residents that pay for services. I believe that this is something that definitely needs to be attended to in terms of closing and mending the gaps as far as the revenue gap and the revenue net is concerned. I'm not privy to engage in depth around that issue, but I think I can note it as a concern moving forward. And in terms of businesses not paying for services and unregulated business expansions, we have multiple projects of research around SAGA, liaising with our members, of course, in terms of assisting municipalities to better improve their revenue processes and revenue practices. One of the areas where we want to explore this principle is with the leveraging of SARS information around non-revenue information, non-financial information, in order for us to be able to improve the billing data, the financial data of municipalities as and when they assess who are the people that are credible to pay for services. We believe that this would definitely go a long way as far as attending to the issue of businesses that are registered within a region but that are not registered with municipalities. But if municipalities would be able to extract non-financial data from SARS as far as establishing which businesses are active within its region, this will go a long way towards identifying those businesses that are not paying for services. Again, also with the unregulated building expansions, I believe that this is something that municipalities will have to do a lot more in terms of strengthening their bylaws and ensuring that whoever has applied for or whoever is undertaking this process does it according to the normal standards and the bylaws of the municipality. In terms of the proposal around the 9%, the very contentious issue that the government always raises, the 9% revenue that is due to municipalities, we can say up front with SAGA that we are already aware of the fiscal framework for municipalities, own revenue, being able to charge, to levy tariffs, and also be in a position to provide services and collect revenue on that. That's one aspect of revenue streams that a municipality has. We are aware of the intergovernmental transfers that go to municipalities in the form of grants, in the form of equitable share transfers. And we are also aware of and welcome the recent strides that National Treasury is trying to undertake as far as enabling and allowing for municipalities to explore borrowing more. But in terms of the overall package, the most contentious issue that SAGA has is the alignment of functions by municipalities to the funding of the sector. I think that is very, very key. And one of the projects that we've been trying to undertake through COCTA is to have a review of powers and functions in the sector to say, after this review has been done, what sphere of government does what, and whether the function that is being conducted by that sphere is adequate in terms of the funding and the function that is being performed by the sphere of government. And of course, our proposal around this has been an argument that when the local government equitable share was reviewed, it was only reviewed horizontally. So basically what was done was it was reviewed in terms of what can go to municipalities. And we definitely welcome the formula as is today because of the fact that it favors poor households. But the most important thing is there was never any vertical review of transfers between spheres. And our position is that we need to have a vertical review of transfers between the spheres in order to establish whether the functions are adequate and whether the funding is followed by that function.
And I think that's one area, Chair, where we really want to explore the space. And then in terms of the internal management structures, and I think the chair was specific in terms of billing, revenue collection, tariffs, procurement practices as well. Around this space, Chair, in terms of monitoring of what municipalities do, SALGA has a dedicated program. We term it the Municipal Audit Support Program. Specifically, it focuses on the red zone municipalities as far as AG is concerned, the disclaimer, the advance, audit outcomes on municipalities. And from this program, Chair, it has been very systematic over the 4 years that we've been doing it in terms of analyzing and assessing what the challenges are in that municipality, being in a position to provide support and being in a position to not only do that but also identify the gaps in the support that the municipalities are receiving in order to leverage the Section 154 of the Constitution. Stakeholders approach National Treasury, Provincial Treasuries, COCTA, in order to indicate the gaps in the support that municipalities are getting. This has been our flagship program over the past 5 years, and we plan to review it in the next year when it matures in 5 years, when the 5 years mature. And in terms of billing as well, there's a lot of work that SALGA has done in that space, in the sense of developing tools around credible tariff models, the ability of municipalities to develop credible tariffs. And we are aware that, as is now in the country, not all municipalities are developing transparent and cost-effective tariffs, and that's been one of the areas where SALGA has been playing in that space in terms of providing support around that. We definitely believe in the fact that municipalities must prioritize internal efficiencies. We must discourage wastefulness. We must leverage our funding, provide a service, bill, and collect. We had a billing study that we did 2 or 3 years ago, and from that billing study, Chair, we came up with recommendations, one of which was to indicate that we need to encourage whole of government to be in a position to pay for services. Hence, at the end of our presentation, we indicate that we want to explore the expansion of Section 10 of the Municipal Systems Act, in the sense of saying it cannot be that when all government employees benefit from state benefits, yet it's only municipal officials who are mandated to pay for their services within 3 months. And what we're saying here is that if we can push this clause to be in a position to accommodate all state employees, irrespective of fear, it will definitely go a long way towards allowing for more money to go to municipalities as far as services are concerned. Of course, this happening in the sense of a service that having been delivered, happening in the sense of a bill being accurate, being credible, and also being in the sense that all the tariffs that you said cover your costs. I'm trying to check other issues. Around the issue of procurement, we were very, very instrumental, and we do support the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, an initiative that has been undertaken by National Treasury. I think it's 2 or 3 years now. They've also issued some standards, and SALGA has been very instrumental in supporting the department there as far as awareness with municipalities in terms of how to go about credible procurement processes, exploration of transversal contracts, etc., etc. And around, I think it was a comment that was made by the member on the issue of infrastructure grant cuts and the balancing act with the social package and the economical aspect of developing the country. We definitely agree wholeheartedly with the fact that social packages and the social program has been prioritized. And the real purpose of our presentation is to paint a picture that indicates that in as much as there's been an aggressive infrastructure grants rollout or infrastructure program in the country, this cut in the grants will definitely have an impact in the program that we've had for a couple of years now. If I stand to be corrected, but I think City of Johannesburg had a very aggressive program of spending 10 billion in 10 years. And I don't know what the status is now, but that's been the picture and the posture that the country has been taking. And that cut on grants, bearing in mind as well that some of the grants that have been cut are being underspent, which is why we also say that we need to assess the impact of whether the underspending of these grants and whether they can cut, there's correlation there. And in terms of the emergency housing grants, I think it was also a comment by the member. And we have a unit within SAGA which is very passionate about issues of housing. And we will definitely take note of the point that is being made by the member around the fact that, indeed, we are saying there has been a clause that has been added and that more work has to be done in order to accommodate the fact that when people are evicted in a municipal space, there's no accommodation for it. We definitely are taking on that role of doing research around how we can best approach it. On the point that is made by the member on waste management, if I may just take you through the slide itself, differentiated approach funding of waste infrastructure and specialist equipment. Basically what we're seeing here in SAGA is that I think it was the outcomes 9 targets of waste management that by 2019 we should have covered a certain percentage as far as provision of waste management is concerned. And what we're seeing here is that a year before this outcome is met or this outcome deadline is met, there's approximately a 30% backlog in terms of meeting the target. And we then go on to indicate that in the process of waste management, there's the operational processes that are undertaken, the hiring of staff, et cetera, and then there's the infrastructure and the equipment that is involved in that process of waste management. The local government equitable share funds the provision of operational services for indigenous communities, and the onus is on municipalities to fund the very same operational processes through their own revenue. But the point we are putting across here is that there are certain, now the key point here is own revenue. But in a situation where a municipality is highly indigent, where they have very low growth, where even if they were very, very efficient with their own budgets, they would not be able, they still would have a very low revenue base. We are saying that as SAGA, we've identified 27 high priority district municipalities that have exactly this profile. Indigent profiles, budgetary constraints, limited ability to borrow. Because remember, for you to borrow, you must either, if it's on debt, you have to have a strong balance sheet. If it's on project basis, you have to have strong cash flows. And if a municipality does not have this, what we are saying is that the cost, the infrastructure costs of providing this service is estimated at easily 8.5 million when you look at the whole revenue chain, connection, transportation, storage, disposal. And the main cost here is around your collection trucks and the ability to procure them. Because as is now, and I hope my colleagues from the infrastructure will correct me, as is now, the municipal infrastructure grants does not allow for municipalities to procure these trucks. And we are saying that this is a special case region. Therefore, let us look at ways of having a differentiated approach towards the application of MIC in order to prioritize these and priority municipalities and realign our MIC to allow them to be able to procure these trucks. I hope, Chair, Honourable Member, this explains what we're trying to say with this slide. Thank you.
Because I think in these other forums,
Thank you, Chair. The proposal that we have made around the issue of the 9% specifically has been around the fact that the 9% is mainly based on the functions provided by municipalities. So it's program-based. What are the issues per se? And one of the main issues that we have addressed is to say we believe that there needs to be a review of powers and functions, because some of these functions end up being made by municipalities without any funding for them. So very, very key is that since 2013, SAGA already has been advocating for a review of powers and functions, which is supposed to be undertaken by COCTA, which we are still, as is today now, waiting for that process to happen. And we believe that as soon as this process can be undertaken, it will allow us to have a bigger picture and a better picture of how functions are being devolved through municipalities and CS, and whether the funding that comes through the fiscal is adequate enough to cover the functions by CS. Also, in terms of the vertical transfer, it's aligned to power expenses as well. We are saying we need to review the funding that goes in each CS in order to assess whether it's adequate and whether it's aligned to the functions that are being performed. But to put it on record today, we are still waiting as SAGA for the Department of Corporate Governance to finalize the powers and functions sector. And we believe that with that process, we will be in a better position to say, indeed, whatever national treasury gets, whatever national department gets, whatever province gets, and whatever local government gets, is adequate or not. Thank you.
Doctor, and then national treasury? Okay. Chairperson, we, FFC, have done some work on this, and we believe that digital fiscal effort is required to improve efficiency and productivity to ensure that municipalities are able to actually better finance their operations. However, we believe that the huge backlogs and the fact that with regard to metros and the like, huge migration challenges, developmental challenges, etc., is a cause of concern. So the adequacy of the 9% FFC have actually indicated that it's not sufficient. There have been suggestions from the FFC of a local business tax, which also has support from SAGA, and that something at the right time when the economy is such that we can actually review these issues, we hope that the Davies Commission would actually be extended to actually look at that issue as well. So I think there has been some work done. I fully agree as well that the powers and functions need to be reviewed to ensure that the unfunded mandates that have crept in, again, the FFC have done a number of papers on the unfunded mandates, and partly it's local government fault. Let me say this without fear of contradiction, because what's actually happened is municipalities have taken on the burden of whether it be primary health care, but it's not their funded mandate, libraries, etc. So we find ourselves in that space primarily because there's a gap and you want to actually not see communities divided. It's one government as such, and although there's different spheres that provide service, you want to find yourself wanting. So municipalities keep on falling into the trap of providing these services, ends up being unfunded mandates, and therefore the actual call to actually review the powers and functions is very appropriate. But I think if you look at the challenges of municipalities and the fact they're at the coal face, I sincerely believe that their adequacy of the 9% needs to be clearly looked at. Thank you.
The committee will be happy if you can share this report with the committee. But also, I'm sure SAGA would also have interest in that report. And National Treasury. Okay. All right, over to National Treasury.
Thank you. We're going to deal with two issues raised, and the one deals with the issue that's just been discussed, and the other one that deals with the waste management issue. What is quite important, and I think we all do have a shared understanding and appreciation of the importance of having local government to function properly. That is quite key, that should underpin everything. The second issue that's quite important in this regard is that just focusing on a percentage doesn't really add so much value to the discussion, because if you look at where the local government in terms of 2017 ranks were 1998-99, it was at 6 billion. If you look at 2017-18, then it now stands at 112 billion. So local government has been the sphere where it's increased much more than the other spheres of government over time. And in terms of, like we pointed out in yesterday's presentation, in some of the analysis that we've done in terms of the additional money that went into the system and where the money actually went, it was not in terms of service delivery, it actually went to increase salaries. So that is a bit of concern. So just focusing on the additional money is, and what is the profit share to local government, it's not really where we should focus on the discussion. What would really be quite useful in taking this issue forward is to look at where are the challenges in the system? Where can municipalities improve in terms of own revenue collection? Where are the challenges and powers and functions, for example? And try to identify what are the key levers that we've got and the key issues that we need to focus on to get local government to function properly. And put dedicated effort behind that. That will really take us forward. As Selga indicated in its presentation, we have recently established a technical forum that supports the budget forum. The budget forum is a committee that is chaired by the Minister of Finance, and MECs of Finance attend, and it's also accompanied by the MECs of Cooperative Governance and the Minister of Cooperative and Traditional Affairs is also invited to that meeting. And quite a bit of work can be referred to the technical committee. The technical committee consists of National Treasury, consists of SOLGA, and it consists also of the FFC. And that could be a very useful platform for us to start really identifying what are the real issues that's actually hampering local government, and focus on what are the issues that local government must do differently, but also focus on where are the challenges in the national government space where some issues also need to be addressed. And that will really be quite useful, and it would be quite useful for us then from time to time to report back to this committee on the progress that we've made. And that will be joint work. It wouldn't be National Treasury's view, it wouldn't be FFC's view, it wouldn't be SOLGA's views. It will be collaboration and agreement amongst ourselves that would be quite useful. Otherwise, next year we sit again in this committee saying the 9% is not sufficient, and that doesn't really take us forward. Stephen, can you deal with a late one, please?
Sure. James is quite correct that the municipal infrastructure grant rules currently don't allow for the purchase of refuse removal vehicles. And it's a complex issue and one that we're engaging with the Department of Cooperative Governance and the Department of Environmental Affairs, which is obviously responsible for the waste management value chain. Because those trucks are not infrastructure, they're not eligible to be funded through the municipal infrastructure grant, but they are large capital investments that are required to deliver a municipal service. So there's an argument for adding, for allowing them to be used in the funded from the municipal infrastructure grant. But we've said to the there's also, though, you must note, a lot of municipalities contract those trucks, so they don't own them themselves. Either they hire a service provider to provide the full waste management service on their behalf, or they rent the trucks from a provider. And in those cases, then it's not a capital purchase, then it's an operating expense. And note that the operating expenditure for waste management services is funded through the local government equitable share. So there are kind of these two sources of funding that need to be married. So we've asked the Department of Environmental Affairs to work on some kind of policy guidance around how those kind of decisions should be made and in a municipality and what the funding implications are, and we can then make any necessary adjustments in the funding framework. We have also said to the Department of Energy that if we are going to take the option of allowing the purchase of such vehicles through the municipal infrastructure grant, then there must be some kind of transversal tender in place. I think ourselves and the Department of Cooperative Governance are concerned that there's potential for corruption in the purchase of vehicles like this, and there's also the potential that if a municipality is falling behind or underspending on its MIG projects, it's quite a quick thing at the end of the financial year to just buy a few extra trucks and then push up your expenditure that way for perhaps vehicles that you don't need. So we're very cautious about the kind of things that could go on here, so that's why we've said there should be a transversal tender as well. And just lastly, if I can say that I think the commentary from Salga around the environmental health workers is really helpful in pointing out that, you know, this is a relatively small service. It's not a very expensive service, and we have it is a core service of district municipalities that they're meant to provide, and that it would take relatively little effort to reprioritize more funding within their existing budget to be able to do that. And I think it links very nicely to some of the points that our DDG was making yesterday about the way that municipal budgets have really been inflated on some of the costs of personnel. And this is a good example of how some of that can be shifted across to service delivery. So thank you to Salga for making that point.
From the look of things, Prof, can see you want to come in.
There's one matter that seems to be been on the radar screen for some time, off the radar screen, is the whole question of debts owed to municipalities. And it seems to me that the soft target has always been the citizens that live in those areas where services get cut if they don't pay their accounts to municipalities. But the main culprit has been business and government departments. And it seems that the number that we know of is that last year, around 126 billion was owed in debt to municipalities. Now, that's a huge sum of money which can go into helping building the capacity in municipalities for services, capacity on service delivery, the service delivery value chain, and also the financing of that. And I think that I've raised it with the Salga leadership last week, that there's a need to make much harder decisions on corporates and business and government departments, in particular national and provincial departments that haven't paid the municipal charges, whether it's electricity, whether it's water, to municipalities. And I think there's a political decision making which is found wanting, but it's also decisiveness on the administration side, being the municipal managers and others. And I know there's been attempts to do this. So that's the one set of issues which has over years accumulated, but it's taking the capability away from the citizens to get much better services, faster services, and also quality services. And it's a huge sum of money as revenue to municipalities. So there's this thing that that we believe that Salga and municipalities must actually get to make some definitive decisions here. There's been threats across the country at times, and sometimes there's nothing happening to it. Which brings me to the point of where ESCOM has actually intervened in terms of making sure that ESCOM gets its own revenue. So a municipality